11:04 on a Tuesday. Welcome back into the Gary Sharp Show. Split show today. I'm on the road with Omaha Men's Basketball in Dayton, Ohio. We're tonight over at 11:80 at 5:30 with pregame a little after 6. Omaha and the Dayton Flyers at the home of the first four beautiful arena. They love their basketball. It is always one of the top-rated TV markets in the country when it comes to college basketball, regardless if Dayton is playing or not. Something that will get some good ratings tonight, especially if you're in Alabama or maybe you're in Oregon, maybe you're in Oklahoma, will be the third go-around of the college football playoff ranking. So let's welcome in from Athlon Sports, Mitch Light. Good Tuesday morning. Mitch, how are you?
I'm doing good, Gary. Hope you're doing well.
Hey, what was the most shocking thing out of this past weekend?
Obviously, the Tua injury was shocking, not just the impact it has on the college game and the rest of the season. And we don't see that many catastrophic injuries. Obviously, it's a brutal sport, and you see season-ending injuries. But to a guy like that, there's not that many. You know, the fact that Oklahoma beat Baylor obviously was not surprising. The manner in which they did so to come back like that was probably, to me, the storyline of the weekend. I'm not surprised that Minnesota lost to Iowa, and obviously with Iowa being favored, a lot of people weren't surprised by that. So it was an eventful weekend, but, you know, really none of the results on the field were all that surprising.
Let's start with Tua and a very classy statement put out by his family. We saw his reaction in the hospital bed yesterday. We saw the reaction of Nick Saban, whether it be after the game or yesterday, talking about Tua is one of those guys that he can say, I love that I have coached. We will all be kind of curious tonight to see how the committee approaches Tua's injury and Alabama's victory over Mississippi State. What kind of an impact do you think it'll have on maybe tonight's rankings and how we judge Alabama moving forward if they win their last two games, which would include a road victory at Auburn?
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously the storyline to watch. And I don't think we're going to see anything tonight that's different because they were fifth last week. I think they'll be fifth. They have proven that they can blow teams out with Mac Jones. I mean, Arkansas is obviously not very good, but they dominated that game when Mac Jones came in. I think they're still a very good team. The question is, if it all plays out and you're judging a one-loss Alabama team that has beaten Auburn convincingly against a one-loss, Utah or Oregon, how will the sample size be big enough for this team without Tua to judge? And I've been on record, I'm sure I said it on your show, that even with Tua, I don't think Alabama deserved to make the playoff with one loss based on their schedule, barring, unforeseen really weird things happening elsewhere. And now I feel even more strongly that they will not be a playoff team because they won't have the quality wins. And then you factor in that their best offensive player won't be available.
There's so much more to this injury, and you hear the discussion, and you can tell what the impact somebody like him on and off the field has had on Alabama, but also on college football. And you hear then the national talking heads, Mitch, start to chime in about how much players will be willing to put on the line now after they see an injury like that to a guy that was projected to go number one overall. What do you think the effect will be from that standpoint on the game moving forward?
You know, we did this big discussion the last couple of years around bowl season with guys not playing, and it's very difficult to answer. And I've had this debate. You know, how many guys, and this it's not a rhetorical question really. How many guys have had their careers really altered by injuries? I'm sure there are some. The Notre Dame linebacker, John Blank Smith, a couple years ago.
Smith.
He's thriving with the Cowboys now, but I understand he lost wages from getting hurt in the bowl game and stuff, but he's still playing well and making a good living. There's been guys that have been hurt, but I think there's far more cases of guys just playing out the string, playing out their careers, and maybe improving their bowl stock by playing well. So, I have no problem with guys sitting out bowl games. I don't love it, but who am I to tell them they can't play in a quote-unquote meaningless bowl game? What I don't want to see is great players stop playing when their team still has a lot to play for, and I don't think we're going to be seeing that.
Hey, we know that Georgia has a really, really good defense, but Mitch, is there concern about Jake Fromm and that passing offense?
I think there has to be. Yes and no. Okay, Auburn's one of the best defenses in the country, and what did Fromm go, like 10 for 21 or something like that? You know, that was one of those games you do just enough to win. You get the 21-0 lead, and then you kind of you can get a little conservative, but that's kind of what Georgia's MO has been, and that's kind of maybe what an issue is. So, yeah, I don't know if it's Fromm as much as the receivers. You know, Lawrence Cager's been in and out of the lineup, and their talented receivers are really, really young. They don't have the stable of tight ends that they've had, but I think that's a fair concern. But their defense has been, you know, arguably the best in the country. You know, Clemson, Ohio State's up there as well, Utah. But they gave up their first rushing touchdown last year. This team is not a perfect team. It has its flaws. You know, the top three of LSU, Ohio State, and Clemson. I mean, LSU has some defensive flaws, but those look like more complete teams than Georgia right now. And I would say Georgia's issue is, can they beat you in the passing game if they need to?
Hey, we've kind of fallen in love with Dabo Swinney, and he, you know, plays sometimes close to the vest, and other times he lets you know exactly what he's thinking. Should we just look into what Dabo Swinney's doing right now, Mitch? And this is part of his message-sending mood. They obliterated Wake Forest, who some think is the second-best team in the ACC, where they got four straight games where they scored over 50. Don't you get the feeling that Clemson is just reminding all of us that they're still out here, that they're still the defending champion?
Yeah, I think they, you know, they're in the just cruise control, and Dabo loves all the, you know, the doubters, the fact that he's not number one right now. And, you know, we talked about this last week, and, you know, it's perfect scenario for him just to keep his guys motivated. And they had that scare with North Carolina, but since then they've probably, you know, who's to say who's been better, Clemson or Ohio State or LSU? They've all been dominant, but Clemson's defense has been incredible, and the rest of the ACC is not very good. We all get that. So what happens when your competition's not very good? You should blow them out, and that's what they've done. So I think they are. If someone wanted to rank Clemson one in the country right now, it'd be hard to argue. You know, I have them three, but they have been great over the past 6 weeks.
It may be because Ohio State's biggest rival is Michigan, and it just happens to fall the week after this. But they play Penn State, and Penn State and Ohio State the last few years have played some really close games, actually since Penn State has been in the Big Ten. But there's not really that, oh, man, Penn State and Ohio State is a rivalry. Huge game for Ohio State, pretty important game for Penn State. How do you see this one unfolding in Columbus?
Yeah, I mean, I like Penn. I like Ohio State. I think they're heavily favored for a reason. Penn State's really good. I think they're in that second tier of teams. They're not in the elite tier. And I know the game. The purpose of the game is winning. But when you're trying to sort out all these really good teams, you have to dive a little deeper. And how are they winning? Are they winning in convincing fashion, or are they not? And we talk about Clemson and Ohio State and LSU dominating. Well, Penn State beat Pitt by 7. They beat Iowa by 5. They beat Michigan by 7. They lost to Minnesota. They beat Indiana by 7. Great season. Yep. They could still make the college football playoff. If they beat Ohio State and Rutgers and then, you know, beat Wisconsin or Minnesota, they'll be right in the discussion there. But I think when you're just comparing the two teams, Ohio State's better. They haven't faced the schedule yet because they play Michigan later in the season, and they haven't played, Iowa. But I think Ohio State's better. And you mentioned that these two games, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the last 2 years, Penn State has had double-digit fourth-quarter leads against Ohio State, yeah. Lost both games, and then the previous year was the year when Penn State blocked a field goal when they had no business winning that game. So it really has been an interesting three-year run in this series.
After this weekend, where Minnesota loses at Iowa and Wisconsin comes into Lincoln and wins, the Big Ten West is wide open 2 weeks from now. As we all predicted, it would come down to a game in Minneapolis. Who do you think will advance to the title game, Wisconsin or Minnesota, after what you saw this past weekend?
That's going to be a good one. I still like Minnesota. If Tanner Morgan's healthy, I mean, I know it's not about yardage, it's about points, but they moved the ball. They had, 400 yards. I still like their versatility on offense, their balance, their skill. If the game were in Madison, I'd probably pick Wisconsin, but as long as they're healthy, I think Minnesota's good enough to win that game, and I'm looking forward to it. It's fun to see new teams involved, and you know, I'd love to see Minnesota in the Big Ten. Again, no dog in the hunt there, but I'd love to see Minnesota in the Big Ten title game.
Hey, so you live in Nashville, so you hear a lot about Jeremy Pruitt at Tennessee. You come on every Tuesday, and we talk about Nebraska. I'm looking at Tom Herman, who for the second straight week goes into a game where if they lost, it wouldn't be considered an upset, and that would be against Iowa State and Baylor. There's a lot of angst in Austin right now. We know about Taggart is out. I mentioned Pruitt. You got Dan Mullen at Florida. How do you, Mitch, judge a coach who inherits a quote-unquote broken former powerhouse?
Yeah, it's difficult, and you can't really compare. Each case is different. Like, I agree with the decisions at Florida State and Arkansas, as difficult as they were in year two. I'm maybe a little disappointed is not the right word because I don't really care, but disappointed that Texas isn't further along. But I think there are some extenuating circumstances. They've had a lot of injuries on defense. They're very young on defense. I still believe that Tom Herman will win at Texas. Now, will they be a national power? I don't know, but I think they will be a consistent top two or three team in that league. Jeremy Pruitt is a different situation here. You know, they have gotten better, but they went from awful to competent. They haven't really beaten anyone good, but they've definitely made strides. I mean, they beat South Carolina at home. They beat Kentucky with a wide receiver playing quarterback. Now they go to Missouri on the road this week, and Missouri's not very good. So I think what Pruitt is kind of winning people over just from showing that this team can be competent. And if they can go to a bowl game after being 0-2 against that schedule, that would be something there. So I think, you know, each case is different, and each case has its own, you know, each school has its own quirks and reasons why you should win there or you shouldn't win there, and it's just that's the difficult decisions these schools have to make when they're determining whether or not to make a change.
What do you think happens? Because, you know, you're in year three in Texas with Tom Herman, and they really haven't established an identity, and you're trying to find progress when you thought last year when they beat Georgia in the Sugar Bowl, they had some hype the way they played against Oklahoma in the Big 12 championship game, that Texas was, I hate this, back.
Right.
Now, I mean, that wasn't an upset to me what happened in Ames. And
no.
And they, you know, and if Baylor doesn't have a hangover, that's going to be another tough game. What do you think happens going into year four in Austin? Do you foresee, like, staff changes or any change under Tom Herman?
Yeah, no, there's been talk of Todd Orlando, the defensive coordinator, who's well-respected. I mean, he did a great job with Tom Herman at Houston. And, again, he's, you know, what do I know? I'm not, you know, watching every game on film or, you know, the X's and O's. But people I know respect him. But they've been awful this year. And a lot of it's injuries. And people don't want to hear about injuries at Texas. So it's the University of Texas. They should have great talent. And they do have pretty good talent. And they've recruited well, especially in the secondary there. But it's been very young. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's one where people that kind of fall off the radar, they're not in anyone's top 25 next year, but they get a lot of guys back. Assume Ellinger will be back. They got some good young running backs who are hurt. They could be a team that we're sitting here next November and be like, why didn't we see this coming with Texas? They're 9-1. So again, I believe in Herman, but I just think there's been a lot of things just haven't gone his way this year. But to your original point, Gary, people in Texas don't want to hear about losing to Iowa State and it not being an upset. I mean, they were seven-point dog. When you lure Tom Herman away and you get him away from going to LSU in year three, you don't expect to be a 7-point underdog to Iowa State.
Does kind of tying Texas and Nebraska together for people that are looking at, okay, trying to fix a powerhouse and to get it right? Oh boy, I remember Charlie Strong. People say that about Mike Riley here. Is that comparable?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a little bit. You know, again, like, this sounds like a cop-out. Each case is different. You know, recruiting bases are different. You have different expectations of talent. So yes and no. And again, I still believe in Scott Frost. From the outside, I'm a believer in Scott Frost. I thought it was a good thing that they, you know, with all the stuff going on, the guys getting fired, I thought it was good that they offered him just the 2-year extension, shows a commitment, and I think Texas can still win. Now, if you listen to me, you probably think, well, Mitch thinks everyone can win because he keeps saying everyone's going to get it done, but those are two cases where I believe that those coaches will still be, you know, in 5 years down the road, they'll still be in their current jobs.
And you know, in college football, things can change quickly, whether it be in Knoxville with Jeremy Pruitt, in Ann Arbor with Jim Harbaugh. Since they got run out of Madison back in September, they're 6-1, and they're a drop pass at State College from that game going into overtime against Penn State. What do you like about this Michigan team in their last seven games where they're playing a lot better, but they're hammering people, including their cross-state rival?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a lot of its confidence and just a little bit of a swagger and enjoying some success and kind of playing their way out of that you know, is our coach going to get fired? You know, that talk that they're no longer the talk of college football for the wrong reasons. I think that can go a long way. I would say that, you know, they started running the ball better and they did all that good stuff. You know, went back to Michigan football, but then they didn't run the ball great against Michigan State. That, you know, Shea Patterson has first 300-yard game there, so I guess I like the offensive versatility. I think a lot of it's just confidence. And kind of to your original point, I know we're going back a few years, but how things can change. Just think, I mentioned that Ohio State-Penn State game, Gary, from 3 years ago. People wanted James Franklin to run out of town.
Yep.
You know, the previous week, I think they needed overtime to beat Minnesota. And then
yes.
They go on and beat Ohio State as an underdog, and they go to the Rose Bowl, and then they go on and, you know, they've had a great 2.5-3 year run since. So, you know, same thing with Minnesota. Who would have thought Minnesota would be where it's at now? So that's one reason we love this sport so much, is because it's so difficult to figure out where programs are going to be year after year.
We absolutely do. Mitch, as always, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you next Tuesday.
All right. Take care, Gary.
That's Mitch Light from Athlon Sports. You can follow Mitch on Twitter at Mitch Athlon, and he's got a great podcast that is up every Tuesday with Braden Gall, breaking down the weekend of college football and what is ahead. What will happen tonight with college football rankings? LSU, despite giving up a boatload of yards to Ole Miss, should remain number one, but Ohio State, and I think LSU, Ohio State, Clemson right now are locked in as the three, and the fourth is kind of open. Now Georgia will be the number four team, but if LSU, Ohio State, and Clemson all hold serve, they are in. But could Ohio State catch LSU? Absolutely they can. If Ohio State beats Penn State, if they also grab a victory against Michigan and Minnesota or Wisconsin in Indianapolis, Ohio State could be the number one. So what we're talking about here is probably the number four being up for grabs. And so I think tonight LSU, Ohio State, Clemson, Georgia. But where will Alabama fall? And what will happen with Penn State? How far will Minnesota fall? How far will Baylor fall? And where will Oklahoma and Oregon be? Oregon has two conference games remaining. They got to go to Arizona State this weekend, and then they have a much improved Oregon State team. You've also got Utah in the mix, who absolutely destroyed UCLA. So you have Utah and Oregon are going to play for the Pac-12 championship. And then how does the committee judge what Oklahoma did, being down 28-3, and they come back and win, and they beat Baylor 34-31. It's their biggest win of the season so far. What do they do with Oklahoma? Does Oklahoma find themselves at 6 or 7, or are they sticking like at 8? Lots of intrigue tonight for the third round of rankings going on. But that's how I see the field. I see the four. Not really. It's earth-shattering. LSU, Ohio State, Clemson, Georgia. I think number five will be Oregon, followed by Alabama. And you'll get to hear a lot about what Ohio State did when they lost their starting quarterback. They went on to win a championship. Mac Jones, if Mac Jones goes on the road and wins at Auburn, that will have some cachet, but probably not enough, in my opinion, to slide them into four ahead of an Oregon or even a Utah. All right, coming up here in about 10 minutes, Brody Darren will join us. We'll talk some Creighton basketball. Jays are off until this weekend when they take on Cal Poly on Friday night. They're coming off a win on Saturday against Louisiana Tech. It's been a light schedule so far for Creighton. Light schedule for Nebraska as well. Robin Washington, a little bit later, we'll talk about Nebraska's first victory of the year last Friday against South Dakota State. Where, on the other hand, Omaha will squeeze before the week is over. They will have played 6 games in the first 3 weeks, including 2 in less than 48 hours, tonight here in Dayton against the Flyers from the Atlantic 10, and then fly across the country to play at Washington State in less than 48 hours on Thursday. It's the Gary Sharp Show. Matt Stein back in studio in the Big O. It's 12, or it's 11. I quit looking at the time here. 11:23 on a Tuesday on 1620 The Zone.